Hello, everyone. Welcome to a very special episode of Uncanny Tracks, where, to my great shame, to my eternal shame, I broke down and I watched the 2025 Superman, and Matt enthusiastically watched the 2025 Superman, and we're going to talk about it. That's Matt in Southland. I'm Bob in Cascadia. We're Uncanny Tracks.
I had a great time as Superman, Bob. I was really excited about the film, honestly, when it first showed up. I'll say the Henry Cavill Superman was not my cup of tea. I'm sure it was a Superman for like a generation that wasn't meant for me, whatever, I get it. But this Superman, he's more of what I expect out of a Superman.
It's weird. I have a friend of a friend. I think I've told you about this friend of a friend on air before, who's a Superman super fan and knows the comics really well, but also for whatever particular reason, just really vibed with the Henry Cavill, Zack Snyder movies, which mystified me. It's very rare that you come across a person who's a Zack Snyder fan and who's also read many more comics than Dark Knight Returns. I'm still waiting on the update of what this friend of a friend thought of the movie. I asked my friend, who's the intermediary with the friend and the friend of the friend, what he thought, and I should have done my due journalistic diligence to really needle him. I need to know what he thinks so I can bring that perspective to my podcast.
The listeners really need to know, Bob, what this dude thought about it, because this is a Zack Snyder fan. I'll be honest, I was okay with the Justice League stuff. It was mediocre. I was just glad to see the characters on screen all together. That was cool. There was that aura to it. Oh, yeah. Wow. Oh, they're here. And oh, we have a Justice League movie on film. But then once you step back and look at it, and once he started putting out the different cuts and then the black and white one, this is meant to be popcorn trash. And you're trying to turn it into something more than it is.
That was the other thing that always mystified me about the Snyder fans, is I also used to listen to a film podcast, and my friend Noah did as well. And we sort of liked the show, but we were also mystified by the show. And they were like film snobs, right? Oh. They liked arty films, they liked action films, but they had very particular opinions about what were good and what were bad action and horror films. And they mostly thought superhero films were trash, which absolutely, they pretty much are. But their one exception was they liked the Snyder films somewhat. They
thought, oh my gosh.
And it was just, guys, they're the same as the MCU. There's minor stylistic differences, but it just goes back to a theory that I think I've said in our superhero movie episodes before. And I know my friend Noah believes wholeheartedly. There's the difference between Morbius and James Gunn's Superman, which is to say a difference between a really bad superhero movie and a really good superhero movie, is there's not much difference. They're basically the same.
In the grand scheme of things, there was a guy on Reddit who said that he judged the superhero films based on if you could take the main character and replace it with any other character and the film still makes sense.
That's an interesting standard.
I don't know if I necessarily agree with that, but I thought it was an interesting way to look at it. And I'd say with this Superman film, I don't think you could do that.
It's very particular. And I will say what I liked about it, and we might talk about the other Superman films a bit more at the end of today's episode. But in general, from what I've seen of the Christopher Reeve Superman, and which is not much, and what I've seen of the Zack Snyder Superman, they don't really capture the things I love about either 1960s Silver Age Superman comics, late 1950s, early 1960s Silver Age Superman, nor do they really capture what I love about like late 80s, early 90s soap opera Superman. And this film does a bit of both. It's not like hardcore in either direction, but I feel the influence of both the Silver Age and the Triangle era on this film, and I appreciate that. It triggers a little bit of nostalgia for me, so that's why, at least.
I don't like the way you frame that, saying the Silver Age stuff is not necessarily heavy hitting or hard. They don't slap you over the head with it. But there are scenes, especially with Krypto, where you're like, oh yeah, this is total Silver Age stuff. Krypto showing up. Dude, all the finale, which we'll get to in a little while, how that ends up. And then seeing the Fortress of Solitude with the robots, not just this barren wasteland thing. I'm trying to think about, there's a lot of other Silver Age inspirations. We'll get to them as we go through.
Although I think it is, as far as I know, they, in the Silver Age, nor in more modern times, they never give the robots personality, which, I mean, is not shocking, right? We've talked about how that it's the kind of like Disney cartoonification of cinema, of like the need to make robots and props, like Doctor Strange capes have personality and Thor's hammer have a personality. And so you have that here with Superman's robots having a personality because they're voiced by the guy from Firefly, the pilot from Firefly.
Exactly. And they have to be able to sell them action figures, Bob. There's action figures at number four.
Did you have any other broad thoughts about it, Matt, before we get into a couple of particulars?
I'm just glad to see bright-colored Superman back. That's the one thing I just want to point out. When you make a superhero film, it doesn't have to be so monotone.
And Matt, did you ever wind up seeing The Marvels?
No.
This film reminded me of The Marvels, the Captain Marvel from Marvel a couple years ago that had Kamala Khan and Binary in it. It reminded me in that both were fairly short, both were silly, and both were very episodic, right? It had the feeling of, I guess I'll go ahead and say it. This film to me reminded me of both a series of Fleischer Superman cartoons from the 1940s where you have Superman overcoming different physical threats in about 8 to 10 minute segments, or some comics sometimes do where you have a 6-issue arc and you have 6 very different set pieces or very different stories in each of the issues that build up to an overall conclusion. I like that. I think superhero movies are usually structured with an overriding conflict and fewer set pieces. I think this is a better formula for superhero movies in general. It's also just lighter, funner. I also like The Marvels, which were sending me some statistics where people keep saying The Marvels is one of the worst superhero movies. Well, I don't think it's like amazing. I don't think it's revelatory cinema, but by the standards of these things, it's pretty good.
It's also the shortest. Let me ask you this, Bob. Do you think it's like he structures it like a comic book, the way comic book arcs are structured?
Yeah, I think the Fleischer cartoons and the issue structure are in Gunn's mind. I don't want to overplay this. You could overstate this, but I think it's in Gunn's mind, and I think it benefits this a lot.
Going back to that, Bob, would you say that he structured Creature Commandos in the same way?
No, Matt. I would say with Creature Commandos, he wrote a single story that would have been, I wouldn't say good for a movie, but would have worked as a movie, and then he just cut it up into the 8 episodes and put in a lot of flashbacks.
A lot of origin stories.
That sounds similar, but I actually think it's distinctly different. And even though I'm somewhat optimistic about future movies in this James Gunn universe after the Superman movie, I'm still not optimistic about all these video games and TV shows he's going to put out. Because we observe this with Creature Commandos, that there's a paralysis of storytelling. When everything has to tie into the same universe, you don't want to move the goalpost forward, or you don't want to draw on too many characters. And that's what I was seeing in Creature Commandos, was he's got, oh, there's all this other stuff I want to get to eventually, but I don't want to get to it now. So I just have to mark time by turning a single mission into 8 episodes with a lot of flashbacks.
Well, Bob, it's a good segue into the opening of the film, because this is one of the first times that I feel like a Superman film isn't going to cover his origin story, which, thank God, Bob, I do not want to have to have the origin story again.
It's a good dodge.
Did you appreciate the opening lettering, though, giving you a quick, brief understanding of the universe in like 5 different little sentences that each said 3,000 years ago, 300 years ago, 30 days ago? It just kept going down.
That was pretty clever, and it was interesting. I forgot to put that in the notes, but it was interesting that it does. That's the part to me that most directly tied in with the Creature Commandos. Mm-hmm. There have been metahumans on Earth for 300 years. We see a bit of that in the flashbacks in Creature Commandos. It does seem, based on this and Creature Commandos, that Gunn is more interested in having more of a story for this DC universe in a way that the MCU has never really explored for its history.
Or that the MCU's tried to explore post all the other stuff. Without the world building, but without the history in between, in the middle.
Retrospectively, having Captain Marvel and Nick Fury's adventures in the early 90s for, I mean, on some level it makes sense, but on another level it doesn't make much sense.
I'm thinking even further back with Marvel, but until they brought the TVA in, they didn't really go World War I.
Obviously the one exception to that is Captain America and World War II, but that's just because you have Cap and World War II, right? That's inescapable.
So I'm just saying.
Look, origin stuff, Matt. Did you recognize Bradley Cooper playing Jor-El? I thought Jor-El looked familiar, but I did not know it was.
Whoever played Laura looked a lot like Lady.
Looked her up, and she did not seem to be as famous as Bradley Cooper. And there was nothing that she was in that I think you or I would really know. Although maybe you would know something, and I just had never heard of it.
Yeah, I didn't really recognize. To me, it looked like. And I'm saying this because out of the movie A Star Is Born. With Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper. I'll say this, Bob. The actress that played Laura, she was Clementine in Westworld. So I do recognize her.
Okay. Is she the main robot? Like,
no.
Like, not to be crude, but the main sex robot?
No, she's like probably the third that you would. When it comes to casting of the female sex robot, she's like number 3.
Sex robot. Oh, and don't worry, listeners. We're recording about Strange New Worlds today, too. Yeah. I will have some things to bring up about Sex Robot. Did you have any thoughts on Krypton being evil, Matt?
Was this new to any kind of canon? We had Jor-El and Laura being, just take over the world and create a harem. That was the word James Gunn chose that word on purpose because he knew it would strike a chord with everybody in the audience. I'm sitting there like, they're talking about harems in a Superman movie? They're trying to make Superman like out to be a creepy dude.
They definitely have been people have toyed with that idea before. I can't think of a strong example to tell you, but I feel pretty sure that there have been a couple of different Elseworlds that have done versions of that idea. And this is not exactly the same thing, but another thing that's obviously a huge influence on this film is All-Star Superman.
Right.
And if you remember the issue with the two Kryptonian astronauts who take over Metropolis while Superman is in Bizarro World for a couple months, they're not exactly the same as the way Gunn presents the Kryptonians here, but there's very strong similarities there. The phrase harem, like you said, is specifically chosen by Gunn to trigger the audience. But the general idea of like Superman using us for breeding stock or Superman or Krypton being a more imperialistic culture, there's definitely antecedents to that, Elseworlds and what have you.
Did you buy the whole message was broken thing?
I thought it was fine. I didn't think it was genius, but I didn't have strong opinions of it.
So what do you think of Superman's adoptive parents, Bob? They're very different in this version, which I liked it. They were more real to me. That was realistic.
I get trying to make them very realistic Kansas farmer people. Yeah. It's fine. No strong opinions.
Yeah, I thought that was great.
In the Daily Planet supporting cast, I was really struck by the portrayal of Cat Grant. It was very interesting that on the one hand, she was clearly supposed to be a very busty, very attractive lady, but then she also had this millennial sensitivity to her. It's not the way you usually see Cat Grant played on Lois and Clark or on the Supergirl show. And so that was interesting.
Do you feel like Cat Grant was unnecessary because you had Lex's Mrs. Tessmacher, who kind of has that same role that I think of Cat Grant?
I don't think they spent enough time on Cat Grant to really develop her.
Yeah.
But I was generally fond of having the extended planet staff. I mean, only Lois and Jimmy got any development. Wendell Pierce Bunk from The Wire playing Perry is fun, but
pointless. Ron Troop is there too.
Ron Troop was even in Mr. Terrific's UFO at the end, but I don't think Ron ever has a I would have liked for Ron to at least have a line, but I don't know. I like a full Daily Planet staff.
Cat Grant's portrayal, though, it coincides too much with Tessmacher, so they had to switch her up in a way that I'm not used to seeing her. She would have been more... Of course, I'm basing my Cat Grant on Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman, so maybe that's not the best choice.
I think the comics and I think the Supergirl show go in a very different direction.
Yeah, I only have like one real thought about that. And of course, the stuff I saw in the Triangle era, but I don't really remember much about her other than wanting Clark.
I also think based on the way this actress is playing Cat, if we have another Superman movie, and if Cat Grant is in that movie, and then if the camera gives her a lot of time, which all those are could be pretty big ifs, it wouldn't surprise me if they go in a pretty different direction from Miss Tessmacher.
Speaking of Miss Tessmacher, she plays like a huge role in this film.
Her and Otis from the Christopher Reeve films is back too. Happy for Miss Tessmacher and Otis being in the film.
I like the nod. She acts like an updated version of Tessmacher from the 70s. And then Otis wasn't really the buffoon we expected him to be.
Capable henchman for Luther.
Not too many guys that are really smart guys. Because that always bothered me. Why would Luther surround himself with people who are way stupider than him other than he can control them? I mean, I get that.
It gets to his insecurity.
But I'm glad they didn't overdo anything like Otis being a complete lunky.
He's not Ned Beatty in the original.
Even though Miss Tessmacher is kind of out there, she does end up being a pretty integral part of the plot.
Her whole selfie thing is a way of doing spy stuff. Oh. Jimmy is pretty great.
It's
pretty
brilliant. Great.
So Matt, I did want to ask, we have the pocket universe with the monkeys constantly eating social media, anti-Superman takes, and obviously this is James Gunn defending himself against the Snyder Bros. I don't know. I was weird because on the one hand, I thought this was cringy because it's so obviously James Gunn being defensive. And I get that it sucks to have people constantly calling you a nonce and saying nasty things about you online, but these people are fools, James Gunn. You don't have to worry about them.
Right.
So on the one hand, I thought it was way too meta and way too James Gunn defending himself in his movie. But on the other hand, it actually was funny, and so it didn't ultimately bother me. I was wondering if you felt something similar.
I felt it was very meta as well, and it made me think about the way we produce social media now and how crap it is. Most of everything that comes out could just be being produced by monkeys. Like, half the stuff I read online is just garbage anyway. I thought it was kind of neat. Now, to get to these monkeys, though, Bob, they had to go through the portal or whatever. Was that a boom tube?
It definitely was meant to evoke.
When they go through the boom tube to get to the monkeys, there's the pocket dimension. There's this alien dragging the cart. Who was that?
Oh, I didn't notice. When Luther's like giving Superman like the tour of the facility.
There's a guy that's driving it, and it looks like a Martian. Now, once they do pass all the monkeys, you've got all these jail cells, and Luther's captured all of these people that have done him wrong in the past, old girlfriends, stuff like that. I didn't see anybody that I recognized, although people are saying there's a possibility that Lobo was in one of the cells, if you look very closely.
Oh, God. Just leave him in there.
Bob, you saw at the end of the film. All the monkeys were out. The girlfriend was out. Superman was out.
Look, I'm just saying there needs to be some sort of review process. Yeah. There needs to be a tribunal. And when they get to Lobo, they're okay, everybody else is good, including the multiple murderers. But Lobo, you have to stay.
You just hang out in the pocket universe. Once they went into the pocket universe, I was like, okay, they're definitely going more Silver Age with this. Because that's a whole different vibe for Superman compared to what we saw in Cavill and compared to what we saw with the Return of Superman. Back in the day, there was none of this stuff. All reality warping.
On the one hand, it feels like a very contemporary science fictional idea, but on the other hand, it's handled in a way that recalls the casual craziness of those late 50s, early 60s.
Yes. No one is questioning why Lex Luthor has a camp on a beach with a freaking boom tube. Go into the multicolored portal world.
Beachfront real estate.
And then you have a river of protoplasm or something at the bottom that can kill everybody. You can't get any more Silver Age than that.
A couple other things I wanted to bring up just as mild criticisms. So it is a James Gunn music, so there's going to be a lot of musical choices, and then there's going to be some meta conversation about those musical choices. That's just part of it, man, when you're watching a James Gunn movie. You got to learn to live with it. But even accounting for that, I thought Lois and Clark's conversation about punk rock was a little cringe, especially as somebody who does not like punk.
The punk rock thing is just a James Gunn staple, apparently. I appreciated his musical choices in the Guardians of the Galaxy films, because they're more on my line.
It's your easy listening classics from the 70s and the 80s.
Exactly. That's all it is. And I can listen to those all day. But I don't really know this music that well. And I didn't even know if the band was real. That's pretty bad, isn't it?
I had never heard of them either. But they do drop a song where they use their name, the name of which I've already forgotten. They do drop a song where they use the band's name over the end credits. So presumably they are real. I didn't care enough to look this up.
James Gunn dropped a playlist on Spotify before the film where he had four or five different songs for each character. And I got my wife to go because Tessmacher had three Taylor Swift songs. There's going to be a character that likes Taylor Swift.
Going to be a character that is Taylor. Yeah. I'll start with something that's slight praise. So this film actually does get surprisingly political. Its politics hinge on, do you interpret the fictional country being invaded as Ukraine or Palestine? Which I think the film gives you reason to go with either interpretation, but I want to like the film. So I'm just going to assume that the film is about the invasion of Palestine by Israel, rather than assuming it's about the invasion of Ukraine by Russia. I thought the politics of the film were really striking, and I have seen some people who defend Israel online just melting down and freaking out about this film being anti-Israel, which makes me very happy as somebody who is very to the genocide that's currently going on in Gaza. So I was shocked by the politics of the made-up countries, or I guess they were, well, they're made-up countries, but apparently they're also the made-up countries from one of the very first Superman comics, I think from Action Comics 2.
Right, they're referred back all the way back to the 30s. I did, like, tap Heather and be like, doesn't this sound familiar? I was referring to the Ukraine. My mind went to the Ukraine and the Russia issue. But if you go in that direction, it makes it sound like the USA is coming.
On the one hand, definitely it is in Eastern Europe, right?
Right. Like
you see a lot of Orthodox churches in the backgrounds of the countries. Definitely there's some sense in which the dictator is meant to recall Vladimir Putin, although there's also ways in which he recalls Bibi Netanyahu.
Right. I think that was all intentional, too, on James Gunn's part.
But like what you're saying, Matt, I think the key difference is that the film really stresses that the invading country is a U.S. proxy.
Right.
And that the invaded country is not. And so that really much more puts us in the realm of Israel and Palestine.
When I was watching it, I was, this does seem a lot like the issues going on there. But when was this filmed?
The genocide's been going on for nearly 2 years and not done anything about it. The U.S. is actively enabling it. The attacks that started this round of it on Israel were October 7th, 2023.
James Gunn was filming at that point.
Superman should be pro-Palestinian, and I'm really glad that he pretty directly is in this film. My favorite review of this film on Letterboxd was pro-Palestinian, pro-dog. five stars, which I thought was very witty. But I did think the images of the Palestinian stand-in people basically standing around praying to Superman, that was a little cringe. That was a little too much. I get what Gunn was going for there, but I'd rather he'd not done it in precisely that way.
I felt bad because the boy holding up the flag for Superman or whatever, that was in the trailer. And in my mind, all I could think about was, Superman's going to come in and save the day. And then you find out it's Green Lantern and the other in the Justice Gang.
It was pretty funny that it was not him. That was a good joke.
That was a good joke. Yeah. But going back to what you're talking about with the confrontation and everything, Lois interviews Superman in the beginning of the film. And one of my friends had mentioned something about this being one of the better scenes in the movie. What did you think of her going off on him like that, basically making him question everything he does and see that naive, he doesn't quite understand what he's doing when he's invading these other countries? It's what we would want, yes, but at the same time, there's a lot more going on than just him going in and threatening a leader.
I get what the scene was trying to do. I think it was an especially good scene or that it worked. It's a valid thing to do, but I was not very much a fan.
I liked him getting so tripped up because he can't explain why what he's doing. And in a sense, he is doing what his Kryptonian parents expected of him when he got to Earth, if he is going to act that way.
I disagree a little bit, just in the sense that on the one hand, he's tripped up, but on the one hand, it's just there's a classic tweet. And it's a liberal owning a conservative, and I don't like liberals or conservatives, so I don't want to give liberals too much credit.
Yeah.
It's basically a liberal dunking on a conservative of saying, I don't know how to explain to you that you should care about other people. And that's what it felt like Superman was doing in that moment of, I'm not going to let anybody die if I can avoid it. And that's, on a certain level, what else is there to say?
And that is one thing, I think that's another reason I did appreciate the interview, Bob, because it shows how simplistic Superman is. Because in the grand scheme of things, he went after Luther because of that dog. That's what it boiled down to.
But to give it like the most pro-Superman light, to get revenge for the dog, but just because the dog needs me, I'm going to rescue the dog.
Yeah, I like that that's that simplistic. And that interview really stayed, I like the way you frame that, the way that interview staged that understanding of Superman. And it reminded me a little bit of the interview he has with Lois in Superman from 1978. Same kind of idea without the poem and the flying scene.
Well, I didn't hate this version of Lois. I thought this was a pretty good version of Lois. But on the one hand, it's like the movie wants her to be like the punk rock kid and the skeptic who questions everything. And I get that pushing back on Superman in that interview, it's a responsible thing for a journalist to do, blah, blah, blah. I understand that. But it's also the pushing back mostly consisted of Lois just taking the U.S. government line on the conflict, which is, well, either she takes the U.S. government line or she's a punk rock kid. She doesn't do both.
I like Lois in this movie better than the Lois in the Cavill stuff. Definitely better than Lois in Returns. Margot Kidder, I don't know. Terry Hatcher? Erica Durant? I don't know.
Is Erica Durant the Smallville?
Yeah.
I really like, it was Amy Adams in the Snyder movies, right?
Yeah.
I really like Amy Adams, and I'm not saying she should have, but I don't think she brought her A game, nor do I think Snyder was writing his game for her.
Heck
in his
movies.
I did want to ask, what did you think of how they did the Justice Gang in this movie?
Well, I like that they cobbled them together, and I didn't have to get an origin story. I didn't need to know how they were formed. God.
Think about that, but you're exactly right.
I didn't need to know how they came to be. I didn't even need to really know their name at this point. The running joke is Justice Gang, so they don't even have a name yet, for all intents and purposes. They don't have a headquarters. The Hall of Justice was literally being built while we were watching the film.
I was a lot skeptical about this leading up to the film, because I thought the footage of Guy Gardner, Hot Girl, and Mr. Terrific did not look good. And I deeply love late 80s, early 90s Justice League International, the comedy Justice League book. It was one of my favorite things when we were kids. I have the omnibuses of it now. I really love it. And except for Guy Gardner, these are really the Justice League International characters. And so I'm just a little protective of them. And so I was worried. But as a person who loves that late 80s, early 90s JLI stuff, I thought they did a pretty good job of getting the dynamics. I wasn't over the moon with the portrayal of Hot Girl. It was a little flat and a little weird, but it was still funny in context. And I mostly thought they did a very good job with Mr. Terrific, who's also a character I have a lot of fondness for.
Mr. Terrific really stole the show here. I think everybody loved Mr. Terrific after that film.
The comedy bits with him in the post-credit scene were very good.
Now, Hot Girl, the one scene where she's screeching like a damn banshee or a hawk, does she murder the guy, the president? We do get to see Maxwell Lord for a very short moment, who is played by Sean Gunn. I'm just thankful they didn't go any deeper into that. There's one clip of him, and that was it.
It seems like they're more doing the Justice League International thing, where he's a sketchy but somewhat well-intentioned billionaire, as opposed to a supervillain, which a lot of other portrayals of Max Lord have gone with.
Like Wonder Woman 1984?
Or the Justice League International revivals on this kick. Also, spoilers, they let Metamorpho in. And Metamorpho, although not a central member of the JLI, he is a character more classically associated with the JLI. So that's interesting. But I guess the next question I wanted to ask is, and I can't remember what we've said about this together off mic, but isn't Peacemaker season 2 coming out late this summer? And isn't there some ambiguity of maybe Peacemaker is going to be on the Justice Gang, or no, maybe there's just going to be some cameos from the Justice Gang in Peacemaker season 2? I think it's unclear.
There's a trailer for Peacemaker season 2 where he's trying out for the JLI and they're interviewing him behind a two-way mirror. And behind the two-way mirror, you've got Maxwell Lord, Guy Gardner, and Hulk Girl. And they're talking about him with the mic on. They don't realize the mic is on, so he's able to hear it. Yeah.
Oh, funny.
Speaking of Peacemaker,
that makes it sound it's going to be more a comedy bit and not an ongoing presence in the season.
I don't think he gets in, and that's the whole idea.
That's the whole joke.
But his appearance—they're really trying to build Peacemaker into something. These characters are so obscure to have them out in the forefront now, every film, all over the place. It's so strange because I never would have expected these characters to take off.
It is pretty funny. I was pretty positive on the portrayal of the Justice Gang, the Justice League International. That made me happy. I would say I was not like super over the moon about the engineer from the Authority being one of the villains. I didn't care. It's fine. I don't have any great affection for that character. But it does seem the reporting has been for a couple years that they plan to do an Authority film soon, right? That's one of the next ones coming in theory. And so I assume that if they do the Authority film, part of that will be doing a face turn for the engineer. And based on what we see in this movie, I don't want to watch that movie.
I don't either. The engineer is just a big CGI mess. That's all she is. She's done all she can do. She got her nanobites in Superman's lungs. Come on, that didn't work. What's she going to do to anybody else? But I don't think we need an Authority. No one's going to go see that. His henchmen, it works because they're fun to look at. They've got these crazy power sets that you just don't usually see in the films because they did not focus on fighting in the previous Superman films.
I gave it 3.5 stars. I think it's vastly better than most superhero movies. But if I were going to criticize this film on the CGI, like, there's a lot of visual repetition in this film. The engineer basically has the same move for both Crypto and Superman. She muzzles them with her nanites.
Right.
You see similar muzzling thing of people being black bagged. a couple of other times. There's also a lot of visual repetition of characters having flying objects around them. The engineer has her gears, right? Mm-hmm. Mr. Terrific has his T-spears. Luther has his video game cameras. I thought the visual imagination of this film was maybe a little limited. Again, still pretty good film. I don't want these mild criticisms blown out of proportion, but that would be the CGI effects, I think, were sometimes they could have been better. Some stuff like the protoplasm river you were talking about earlier, that was not bad. I enjoyed that. The prison in the pocket dimension was pretty good.
What did you think of the scene with Mr. Terrific where he takes down the whole base on the beach while protecting Lois?
That was a really good scene, but I thought it was somewhat cheapened by the fact that we'd already see the engineer do something pretty similar with her gears in the Fortress of Solitude. Yeah. We would later see Luther have, spoilers, Bizarro fight Superman with his cameras flying around. Whereas if you had come up with different visual motifs for the engineer and for Luther, that Mr. Terrific scene would have been even cooler on the beach.
There was a lot of that slow-mo fighting. And the one in the Fortress of Solitude was done better than the Mr. Terrific one, in my opinion.
You do? Okay.
I do, yeah. It made Luther seem cooler because he just doesn't do anything the whole time. Just keeps walking.
Yeah. That's a good point.
Whereas Mr. Terrific actually has to interact. They're both good scenes. I just think the one in the Fortress of Solitude was better.
I'm used to assuming that Luther is a genius and capable, whereas I've never seen Mr. Terrific on big screens. Yeah. I'm just more inherently more excited to see Mr. Terrific do his thing.
You did mention the whole Luther fighting Bizarro with the cameras at the end. Did you know that was Bizarro?
I went back and forth because I thought, even though I didn't love the engineer, I thought the pairing off the engineer and Bizarro was interesting. And they did a good job of teasing multiple possibilities. They did a good job of teasing his costume looked like the suit that Doomsday's in early in Death of Superman, right? Mm-hmm. To get ripped apart to reveal Doomsday. So it could have been Doomsday. They were calling him Ultraman, which, you know, is a reference to the evil Superman from the Mirror Universe, which... So it could have been him.
Before that, you had Hammer, he was called at the very beginning.
Yeah, Hammer Baravia. And then also, because he's teaming up with the engineer, he could have been Apollo from the Authority. So that was an interesting possibility. But I thought in that scene where Luther walks in the Fortress of Solitude, I'm okay, so either Ultraman is really Bizarro and has Superman's genes, and that's how they get in, or Luther has injected himself with Superman's genetics and going to get something like All-Star Superman or something like Pete Tomasi's DC Rebirth run where Lex Luthor has Superman powers.
Or, Bob, hear me out. We're going to get the Nicolas Cage story where Superman and Lex Luthor are brothers.
I didn't realize that was the plot of the Tim Burton Nick Cage Superman. That's fine.
Yeah, I know I read that script and it was awful, but it may have been the one with the spiders. It may have been Kevin Smith's.
But I was leaning, though, that it was Bizarro because of the genetics and also because they could, I forget the name of the guy, who was it, David Cornsweet, who plays Superman? It was like, you can just cast him and that'll be a more effective reveal for most of the audience, taking off the mask and it's Doomsday or it's Apollo from Authority.
I was proud of my wife because she looked over, she goes, how did they get the fortress? I don't know, babe. I don't know. We're going to find out, though.
That wife of yours, she's a thinker.
I don't think I even caught it.
Thing I didn't catch, Matt, that I was kicking myself for was as soon as Superman said with Crypto, oh, this is more of a Foster type situation, I should have immediately clocked, because we know they're adapting the Tom King Supergirl comic next. I should have immediately clocked, okay, we're going to get a Supergirl cameo at the end of this. I didn't. I was completely surprised by the Supergirl cameo. It was delightful. I really liked that Tom King Supergirl comic. I was a little pessimistic about the film. This seems to be going in a slightly different direction than the Tom King portrayal of Supergirl, but it could be good. Guardedly optimistic for the Supergirl film now.
I'm excited about it, and I like it's Millie Acock as the actress. She's the only really good thing in that Game of Thrones spinoff or whatever.
One of the younger queens in House of the Dragon, although I forget which one.
I think that's going to be a great film, and I'm glad they did do a short cameo. Although, I will say this, post-credit scene-wise, maybe Gunn's going in a direction where he's just making him weak on purpose.
Honestly, I would much rather have a good joke than a stupid cameo.
And that's what I think he's going to go in that direction. Because when you have to sit there and wait through all the credits, I don't understand why we do that now. Does that not mess up the theater itself? You worked in theater forever.
No, because you have to play the whole film.
Oh, okay.
It's contractually part.
Don't they usually start cleaning though while the credits are on?
Yeah, but theaters these days hardly clean, Matt. You may have noticed.
I also found out too that you're not even switching out reels or putting in DVDs or nothing. They just stream everything to your machine.
I'm sure that never goes awry.
What's the point in having a projection?
Well, I mean, they mostly don't.
It's automated.
Depending on the size, maybe I'm wrong about this because I worked in a one screen theater, but you mostly probably just have on a theater, say a 20 screen theater, you'd probably just have two people on who know what to do, and it's probably automated and they just go and check, or if they need to do something specific, do it.
My sister's boyfriend, he is the manager of a theater, and I was just asking him about it. It's to the point now they just digitally send you everything to the machine that's running it in the projector. It's not even a zip drive, a CD, and nothing. It's just it's no physical media.
That's much further along than when I worked in theaters 10 years ago.
It's crazy.
Well, Matt, any other things before we make our final question here for you?
Not really, Bob. I'm excited about a sequel. We're in the right territory here. We've got a setup with this Bizarro in a black hole somewhere floating around. We've got the Justice Gang trying to get themselves together.
Do you think the Justice Gang would be in the sequel, or do you think that Gunn will take them up in another movie or another TV show?
That's my thought. I'm thinking HBO, this will be after Peacemaker. I'm thinking a Justice Gang TV show. I don't think a movie would be what's right for that group.
Well, do you think we're probably in for about a 5-year wait?
Oh, yeah. It's going to be a while, especially with James Gunn. James Gunn's trying to do everything. He's doing Batman, Wonder Woman movie really quick.
Did I send you that meme that it was James Gunn immediately cancels the third Gal Gadot Wonder Woman, and that's at least one Israeli bomb.
They got to find somebody else to be Wonder Woman. They can keep the music, though. Keep the stupid music. That music is as unforgettable as Danny Elfman's Batman theme and John Williams' Superman theme.
Matt, I hate to undermine your point, but I only saw the first Gal Gadot Wonder Woman, but I don't remember.
Every time she shows up in any films, they play the music, Bob, even in the Justice League. Sounds like you have an auditory issue.
I saw Justice League one time. I don't.
If I played it for you, you know what it was. Oh, one more thing I did want to talk about, Bob. Clark Kent. What did you think of, like, the very small bit of Clark Kent we saw, which I was happy for. I was so happy for, because we're getting plenty of Clark Kent in the My Adventures with Superman.
Some would say too much.
Yeah. So with this, I was like, okay. And Lois already knows, which made it even better. And I think Jimmy and Perry know too. I think they all know. I think they just go along with it because they're respectful of him and they appreciate what he's doing as Superman.
Honestly, there was so much else I was trying to think about and follow that I didn't give it that much thought.
There was a lot of flack about the look of Clark Kent prior to this being released.
Utterly mystifies me.
He had the broccoli haircut, looked a little weird. James Gunn knew what he was doing because he's only in the film for 3 minutes. It's Clark Kent, and the rest is Superman in the suit, which looks awesome.
I also just think this is a thing that I've regularly said that I don't understand it, but I usually think these superhero movies look pretty good when I see them in the theater, right?
Right.
That's the way they're meant to be seen, and just see them once. I never rewatch. But I usually wind up thinking they look pretty good, and that was definitely the case here. But this is not just the James Gunn Superman, although it was pronounced with the James Gunn Superman. I'm not just talking like behind-the-scene photos. I'm talking about production stills. When I see production stills, when I see trailers, I think they look terrible. I don't know if it's just a psychological thing or if it's I've given over to the story, I've given over to the way that the movie's moving, but I thought everything leading up to this movie looked visually bad, and then I thought the movie looked fine. I'm a little worried about Fantastic Four, Matt, because I saw the trailer in front of the Gunn Superman, and I thought the trailer just looked visually awful, even worse than I usually think a superhero movie trailer looks like. And so I'm really going to be curious to see if I can get over the hump with the Fantastic Four the way I usually get over the hump with a superhero movie.
So James Gunn typically tries to use more practical effects, whereas all these Marvel films are just shot on a damn green screen, and it's so obvious, which is one of the reasons the Ant-Man films are like the worst, because they are the worst of perpetrators of that.
I didn't mind the first two, but the third Ant-Man is truly the worst thing I've ever seen.
But yeah, James Gunn does use more practical effects in his film, so that's probably why it looks a little better. I am a little more concerned about the Fantastic Four film now that they've dropped. After James Gunn's success with this film, they decided to drop another trailer for Fantastic Four that gives you way more information than I wanted going into the film. And I was not happy about it.
We'll see. Maybe it's deceptive or out of context.
I hope so. I've seen all 7 solo Superman films, Bob. All of them.
That's 3 more than I have.
You like to rank things. I was going to rank the Superman films. And I'll be honest with you, Bob. Nothing's going to change my mind about Superman 1978 being the first one on the list. It will always be the first on the list. Just like Batman 89 will always be the first on my list.
You wouldn't put Batman Returns over Batman 89?
No, I would not. Too dark.
You and I build a little different.
We are, and that's fine. At least you still have some respect for Batman Returns, Bob. That's good. I have respect it. I love Batman Returns. I think it's awesome. So Superman 78 is always going to be number 1 on the list. This film, Bob, is my new number 2. This film's awesome, and we've already talked about great things about it. Number 3 is Superman 2, which a lot of people say is the better Superman movie than 1 because you have the 3 Kryptonians coming in. I did love this film. As a kid, it wasn't always my favorite because there's a lot of filler scenes. There was a whole lot of controversy surrounding the film. They actually had to release what's called the Donner Cut because during the middle of Superman 2, the director had a change. They switched up things, which then led to the abysmal one that I can't stand, but I'm not going to put on this list. After Superman 2, Bob, I go Superman 4. And people are like, what, Matt? Superman 4? That movie's...
You have strong childhood nostalgia for Radioactive Man.
Exactly. This is a Superman film where you had Superman fighting a monster. Finally, Superman fighting something. The movie itself is complete. The script is awful, but you have a lot of really cool scenes with Superman that are just, I'll never forget and just stick in my mind. And you can fight me on it, but I do love Superman 4, and I think a lot of people our age do have some nostalgia for that film. Man of Steel is next on my list. Bob, Man of Steel, I can't even tell you what happened in the film other than Superman destroying a whole city and killing Zod at the end.
I can't tell you what happened, Matt, because I never saw it.
It's awful. And there's a big thing about Superman destroying stuff in that film, the amount of damage Superman did in Gunn's film. They keep bringing it back up. Superman 3 comes after Man of Steel. Superman 3 has 1 good scene. It's where Superman...
Pryor?
Yeah, no. It has nothing to do with Richard Pryor. Superman fighting himself, the dark version of himself, that whole scene is amazing. That's the only scene worth a flip in that. And that's why it's not on the bottom of my list. At the bottom of my list goes Superman Returns. Superman does not throw a single punch. He's creepy. His characterization's off. And it's meant to be a continuation of the Reeve films. It's so bad. But yeah, that's definitely the worst in my opinion.
I didn't really watch the Reeve Superman films a bit. I think I saw bits of 78 and Superman 2 and Superman 4 when we were kids, but I don't think I ever sat down and watched the whole thing. And I did sit down as an adult and watch the 78 Superman and Superman 2, and I hate them.
Bad. Oh, wow. Yeah, it's totally a nostalgia thing, Bob. Nothing's going to top that 78 Superman for me.
A different friend saw how badly I had 78 ranked on Letterboxd, and he was like, really? I was just like, that poem, brother, that poem. One other thing I will say to maybe trigger you a little, I don't think I've ever even seen a scene from Superman 3, so this is not my opinion, and I might be slightly misremembering it. But there is a pundit out there who reviews the Superman movies, and he did this years ago, but I think he thinks Superman 3 is the only good one of the Reeves films. He's similar age to us, but he didn't really see them as kids, doesn't have any strong nostalgia for them, and then he thinks that, if I'm remembering his argument right, he thinks that Superman 3 more or less does a wacky Silver Age plot in a way he enjoys and respects, and he just doesn't see that in 1, 2, and 4 at all.
I have trouble sitting through Superman 3. I can't keep my attention. There's literally 1 good scene in that film.
I saw Superman Returns in the whole... I thought it was okay at the time, but I didn't see it in theaters. I saw it on DVD, and I don't have strong memories or desire to revisit it.
There's a scene in Superman 3 where Richard Pryor skis off the top of a skyscraper, Bob. He's not rescued. He survives.
Good for Richard.
It's a horrible film.
Proud of
Richard Pryor knew he was making money.
That's been our journey through the James Gunn Superman. It mostly met your expectations. It exceeded my admittedly probably artificially low expectations.
I love the film. It's a great film. If you haven't seen it, go see it. Sorry we ruined it for you.
Yeah. What were you doing listening to that was crazy, Eddie. Join us for our continuing coverage of Star Trek Strange New Worlds. Catch us for our coverage of the Fantastic Four movie. We are Uncanny Tracks. I'm Bob in Cascadia. That's Matt in the Southland.
Thanks for listening.